Welcome, listeners, to Radio Miraya. This is me, Gabriel Shadar, and today we are having a special interview with Ambassador Hazim Mamdouh Fawzi, the ambassador of the Arab Republic of Egypt to the Republic of South Sudan. Thanks, Ambassador, for allowing us and giving us this interview for Radio Miraya.
You're welcome, Mr. Gabriel. I'm very honored by hosting you today in the embassy to talk about our bilateral relations and with South Sudan. I would like also to acknowledge my hosting here in your radio, which is very prominent. I would like to congratulate the Radio Miraya on commemorating its 20th anniversary. I'm happy as an ambassador of my country to make my first media interview with your prominent microphone. This occasion, as an introductory message, gave me the chance to reach to our sisters and brothers in South Sudan to transfer the message of brotherhood, solidarity, cooperation, and stressing on Egypt's government and people's sincerest wishes of peace and prosperity and development to the South Sudan people and government.
Speaking about bilateral relations, what are the latest developments in cooperation in the political, economic, and cultural fields?
As I told you in my introductory message, Egypt and South Sudan are fatally and historically bound. The bilateral relations continue to exist for the welfare of the peoples of both countries. I have to say here that on the occasion of this important engagement of this interview, there are several bonds between us. Not only the Nile River, as both of us are parent states to it, there are also communal bonds. There are mixed marriages, there are culture exchanges, there are living experiences, there are business interests, there are human interactions, youth potentials in both societies, and enormous common development opportunities in the future for both of us. To answer your question regarding the fields of this bilateral cooperation, if you are talking about economics and trade, the current status of this field is not satisfactory in all means for me as an ambassador of Egypt to South Sudan. The figures of bilateral trade and investments are by far unsatisfactory for both countries. There are many challenges and defects which we should talk about, and we should hit it directly. Egypt is trying to work with the South Sudanese government and business community to face those challenges properly, to fix those defects. I will try during my tenure here to explore the ways to facilitate the exchanges between business communities in both countries. I'm sure that many projects and exchanges will be achieved in the near future. I hereby would like to highlight the importance of achieving peace and security in South Sudan as a general guarantee for investors and traders from Egypt or other countries in the world to engage more in the country, looking for achieving the welfare of the people of South Sudan. To talk about culture, I thought I should rearrange the order. Mm-hmm. I would have highlighted culture so much. Mm-hmm. I think culture is the most important aspect of our bilateral relation. I will here tell you an example. Last days, I had the honor to meet with the Minister of Culture and Museum and National Heritage, Honorable Sarah Elijah. We were discussing the ways to explore our cultural cooperation. I noted that we shared the same ideas in lots of topics. The main ideas and comments regarding our common interests and origins. I promise that I will work with the competent Egyptian authorities in the coming period to become extensively engaged culturally in South Sudan, to correct many defaulted messages and stereotypes about Egypt here, which I've noted since I arrived last year. The Egyptian books, arts, movies, serials, literature, language dialects, dances, and others are not strange to all of whom I met here. I'm sure that conveying these unargued facts to our South Sudanese partners will let them believe in our common vision for the future. Talking about politics, which I rearranged to be at last, Egypt is keen, starting from the President of Egypt, His Excellency Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, to foster these relations with South Sudan. As an ambassador here, I am mandated by my minister to work on this target. The Minister of Foreign Affairs of Egypt, His Excellency Dr. Badr Abdel Aati, and his South Sudanese newly appointed counterpart, Honorable Dr. James Morgan, had met in Seoul last month and discussed the latest development of our bilateral relations. Politics in our days are very complicated, especially in our region. In this occasion, I have a message to reveal. The unresolved challenges could produce misconceptions, which are widely used by some circles to create differences between brotherly countries and peoples. I am sure that standing on the grounds of logic and legal principles will prevail upon any ungrounded negative endeavors which will put those endeavors in vain by the end.
Thank you, Mr. Ambassador Hazim Mamdouh. Now, you touch on the cultural issues, and culture comes together with education. And the practice of giving scholarships to South Sudanese is long, as long as the history between the two countries, even when South Sudan was part of the Sudan. So what is the status of the scholarships for South Sudanese, hearing that even some of the scholarships have been suspended?
This is a very important question. Thank you for asking it. Egypt is always keen to assist the daughters and sons of South Sudan to have their education opportunities in Egypt, either in the levels of general and higher education. There are and will always be large numbers of South Sudanese students in the Egyptian schools and universities. There are also some South Sudanese classes and small schools in Egypt right now while I'm talking for the South Sudanese children living there. This is the facts. The Egyptian scholarships program is under technical revision and adjustment from the competent Egyptian authorities. This is in light of the vast demand coming from many countries and many communities in the world looking to benefit from the Egyptian educational system, which is having a growing educational reputation right now. We have many new universities and schools.
Even top universities in Africa.
Yes, yeah. In Africa and in Europe also, and in America and in Canada. All are now, most of them or some of them are opening branches in Cairo and the new capital. Talking about scholarships, I affirm you, it's a standing topic in our bilateral agenda. I'm sure that both governments will assure the continuation of the scholarships offered on the desired level in the earliest convenience.
So there is no, what you said that some scholarship have been suspended. Is it true or it is part of the review and the revision?
No, it's part of the review, and I'm assure you that there are some, till now, there are some South Sudanese students, or most of them, or many of them, are still holding these opportunities in Egypt. Mm-hmm. Because also, this is very important, I think, to say, we couldn't border the educational cooperation in just scholarships. And this I'm telling my South Sudanese counterparts or the officials in Egypt, that we couldn't border or limit our educational cooperation in scholarships only. Because this will be unfair for both of us.
Yes. There are those who can afford their own education and they can go there and study.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Plus, there are already, as Faculty of Medicine or Faculty of Engineering, this review didn't start since 10 or 20 years ago.
Yes.
This is just very recent.
Yes.
So there are, till if you visit Egypt now, visit any educational institution, mm-hmm. you will find many South Sudanese taking their lectures and classes.
We do. Ambassador Hazim Mamdou. The projects that Egypt has been doing in the country mostly were related to power generation, energy sector. And where are we at the moment?
Thank you also for this question. I'm telling you that Egyptian companies, via the years, have executed many projects in South Sudan. If you are talking about the energy sector, we executed many power generation projects. There are two stations about to be inaugurated in Rombek and Yambio. We have another station in Juba. It's under delivery after solving some contractual operational issues. I'm in current coordination with the Minister of Electricity and Dams, Honorable Ajok Makur, mm-hmm. and also liaising with his counterpart in Egypt, His Excellency Dr. Mahmoud Asmat, to work in the bilateral to bring all these projects to light on the earliest convenience. Egypt is also looking to provide its marvelous experience in solar energy, as I think that renewables here is a vast sector. It's very big potential and should be explored more, not in limited projects in limited areas of the country. But Egypt has vast experience in this field. We making a very good projects in solar farming in Aswan and in other places, and also for wind. But I think solar here as a renewable is a very promising mm-hmm. sector, and we are open and already have many contacts now to trying to liaise our Egyptian companies working this field to come to explore the opportunities.
For the mention of the power plants in Juba, Rumbek and Yambio, mm-hmm. citizens who are listening to you, are they expecting these? Will they expect these to be up and running by, let's say, by the end of this year?
I'd like to have general remark. I assure the South Sudanese brothers and sisters that we are working closely with the South Sudanese counterparts to achieve all these projects in time. But the issue here, there are a lot of challenges facing South Sudan in the coming era. So we are looking forward, as I told you, to achieve peace and security in the country.
It's not much about Egyptian government as much as it's about the situation in the country. See, that will determine the situation.
The situation also, and as the political bilateral efforts we are doing right now, to enhance our cooperation or to put it on the right tack, mm-hmm. On the right track.
So, listeners, Radio Miraya, this is me, Gabriel Shadar, and today I'm having a special interview, exclusive interview with Mr. Hazim Mamdouh Fawzi, Ambassador of the Arab Republic of Egypt to the Republic of South Sudan, and we are discussing bilateral relations, among other things. And we have just touched on some of the projects, including the in the energy sector, that the Egyptian government, together with the government of South Sudan, are trying to realize and finish. Now, I was tempted to ask a question about the situation in Sudan affecting both Egypt and South Sudan as neighboring countries. And how do you feel about that, especially the efforts of your government towards peace? You already said the situation in South Sudan is challenging, and now also the situation in Sudan is also challenging.
Of course, Egypt is putting much of its efforts by leadership and the government, and all the competent Egyptian authorities are putting this issue which is happening in Sudan, which is breaking our hearts a lot. You know, Sudan is a border country, and is like South Sudan, having many historical ties and bonds. Even what I'm telling you applied to South Sudan with you is also applying with Sudan by logic. Saving Sudan from its problem is a collective responsibility, as well as political, moral, humanitarian. To prevent a recurrence of the attacks and the massacres which is happening against innocent civilians there in many places. It's a duty on not on Egypt or South Sudan as neighbors for Sudan, but I think for the whole international community to hold this drone attacks and attacking civilians and all these atrocities, breaches of international humanitarian law or any other branch of international law. The crisis is witnessing dangerous developments on the ground, which is happening now as you hear the news about El Obayid and other, due to the siege imposed on it. Egypt is always emphasizing on the need that starving civilians, obstructing humanitarian aid, targeting facilities, civilian facilities, is continuing flagrant violations. So we should face all of this. There are also efforts which we marked to try to weaken or undermining Sudanese state institution, creating new realities on the ground that threatening Sudan's unity. International community is called upon today to confront all these attempts to divide Sudan fragmented. As the Egyptian role, which you've asked about in your question, Egypt has engaged in intensive efforts since the beginning of the events in 2023. Egypt hosted the first Sudanese political groups meeting in 2024, and we are currently discussing how we'll host round two of this meeting. We are engaging in several efforts with the quartet mechanism, which you are a member, and also liaising with the quintet, which is currently working to search for a resolve the status there. We are seeing that ceasefire efforts or temporary humanitarian arrangement shouldn't be misinterpreted as an acceptance of permanent lines of contact or prelude to dividing Sudan. Sometimes people mix between the truce and the ceasefire and the political solutions. This is a bit of mixed messages. Sometimes when talking about the media, the public should know that there are several differences between them, and Egypt knows that very much. But as any quarrel or fight happening in any place. Everybody looking to resolve it, he will look only to stop the fight first, and to bring the access, maybe before, to bring the access to the humans who are suffering. I think this is the main. Then we look for the political inclusive solution. I'd like here to highlight that Egypt is confirming that any solution that equating the Sudanese armed forces with any militias or rebels or whatever are doomed to fail. This is Egyptian stance. I want it to be so much revealed, and thank you for this question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Ambassador. Now let's move back to issues that are related to bilateral relations, but specifically on the situation of the South Sudanese in Egypt. And there have been reports from some South Sudanese that they are detainees in Egypt, describing prolonged detention, overcrowding in the detention centers, and limited access to legal support. Could you share what measures the Egyptian government is taking to ensure that migrants are treated in line with international human rights standards and have timely access due to processes? Social media is full of this, which also needs clarification from your side, because some of them might not be true, and some of them might be true.
Look, thank you, Gabriel, for this important question, which gave me a chance to maybe to participate in correcting the what has been dealt on the social media recently regarding these issues. You know that I'm having a legal background, so I know exactly what is a breach of international law or domestic law and what is not considered a breach. So I'm assuring the South Sudanese community that all what's been done or said in the media or dealt with in the media, last social media exactly, not all, because there are some, of course, social media or media outlets who are really transferring the issue by its real effect. Mm-hmm. I would like to mention that Egypt is hosting more than 10.5 million nationalities from all over the world, which is considered almost 10% of our inhabitants. Egypt is keen, on top of it is the President, His Excellency Abdel Fattah Sisi, have mentioned that we are receiving these South Sudanese brothers and sisters in other nationalities as guests. They are not firmly named as refugees or asylum seekers as the international refugee law is dealing with. Thus, regulating the status of all this number of guests becomes a right and also an obligation for the Egyptian government, as also any hosting government in the whole world. Of course, you know that there are many governments and states who are hosting refugees, asylum seekers, even foreign residents. The President of Egypt, His Excellency Al-Fatah Sisi, has confirmed on many occasions that the state's commitment to providing the guests with basic services within its capacity, while ensuring respect also in the other side for Egyptian laws and Egypt's international obligations. It is very important here, if I could add, to understand that any human being, not government or not persons, has rights and has obligations. This is the balance that is put in law, not only the international law. This is the theory of law. Every one of us has rights and there is obligations around it. So if you abide by the obligations, you could enjoy or entertain your rights. And if you are entertaining your rights, you will also have obligations towards the other side, or the, in our case, the hosting government. Mm-hmm. Egypt knows that so much. By all these competent authorities, and I know also that many South Sudanese know this equation so much. This is what I've seen here when I meet the authorities, when I meet the normal people. All these are informed. So if we assess the media news or the pieces which we have seen, I think if everybody make this exercise while reading this news, he will understand that all what's happening, most of it, or maybe many of it, is fake news, if I could say. I'm also taking this opportunity to say that Egypt does this, all this regulation, with its own nationals. Because, you know, for instance, the issue of the residence permits. If a citizen of Egypt don't have an ID card, he couldn't live with an ID card. It's an obligation for him to go to make an ID card. Because if he was without this ID card, he will be under the application of the law, of the domestic law. So what we are asking from our citizens, we are asking from the whole guests to have these IDs with them. Yeah. I'll tell you a very slight example, and really, because this is very important, I should inform you. Yeah. People have said that the residents haven't been informed by these procedures. I'm telling you that in my car, before I came here in Cairo, I always hear the news. 2 years almost, I was hearing State Information Service airing people, residents of foreign nationals from our brothers and sisters living in Egypt. Please apply for residence permit from either the Ministry of Interior or either the competent department. Mm-hmm. Please, because there are a new domestic law applied in Egypt, in 2024, doing this as condition. Please go. And we gave grace period almost 2 years for this application. We don't go by chance and apply it on the spot. Mm-hmm. We gave two years grace period. So I think This is very important to note. Mm-hmm. And excuse me to confirm this also. Mm-hmm. About forced, sometimes say forced deportation, or arbitrary detentions.
Arbitrary arrest, yeah.
These all are fake legal, characteristics of what's been doing. Because normally there are a chain of procedures having by our justice system or our execution, presenting by the police, to organize all these procedures, which is also, to repeat to you, applying to our Egyptian citizens, mm-hmm, in mm-hmm, general. Mm-hmm. So I think this should all be in mind. We know our international obligations. You know, Egypt is a member of 1951 Refugee Convention, and we are adapting this convention. It enters by our constitution, mm-hmm, the legal system, and it's considered as a domestic law already. Mm-hmm. So we're applying it since a lot of time.
Yeah.
South Sudanese and other nationalities are not new visitors to Egypt.
Yes, I understand, Mr. Ambassador, that your government, and especially the president, believes or states that the South Sudanese and other nationalities are guests. Mm-hmm. But you could see the situation in the Sudan, in which many South Sudanese, they run to Egypt instead of coming here.
Yeah, yeah.
And they had no papers, nothing at all.
Yeah, yeah.
And they entered, which you can say illegally, because there were no checkpoints at the borders, no papers, no visas, no all these sort of things, and they found themselves there. And this is the major concern for us, because these people, they didn't go the regular way. They didn't come through the airports.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't go through the checkpoints. They went there through smugglers.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the concern. And there is a concern on the street here that some security personnel really mishandled some of them.
It is not like a widespread thing, but a small case is doing a lot of rower among our communities. So what do you say about the small cases in which some violations have happened, some injuries have happened, and some prolonged detention has happened because of the big number? You are speaking about 10 million foreigners. At least a small percentage can have something happening negatively, and it will be exaggerated. What's your response?
Yes, and thank you very much for this question. Actually, it assists me in transferring the quite real image which I'd like in this interview. Dealing with individual cases is valid. It's happened in any country in the world that executive or police or law enforcement can have some issues while applying the law. So we have an understanding, complete understanding between our governments, that if you have any case, and this is I'm talking already with Egypt and here also in Juba about this, please report any breach. Please report any breach. I am telling you frankly that in many cases, you know, I just receive maybe quite a numbers on one hand. I can count it on one hand as cases of breach. You are talking
even
about.
Even for us here, we are not speaking about 50,000 or even 50 people. We are speaking about small one, two, three cases.
So if you are talking about 10 million, as you said, I think if you go by international standards, I think it's a success story, not a failure story or whatever.
But even that one family would like to hear a message from you.
I'm telling any family here from South Sudan that if you have any issue, you could report it either here to myself or to the ambassador of South Sudan in Juba, and it's happening, and I know, and we are in contact together to deal with all these relevant issues. And if you noted the declarations or the statements from the South Sudanese government and the embassy in Egypt, you will know that there are many cases have been solved and dealt with, especially for the students and others and patients and whatever, regarding all the massive number. And by the way, this 10.5 million, you have here as South Sudan a big amount. And also, it's good to clarify here that if you have hundreds of thousands of people, we are not in a very idealistic city. Of course, hundreds of thousands, as I'm telling my friend, there are also many Egyptians abroad. So maybe some commit a crime, commit an offense. This also happen in any nationality and any event. So what we say, law have been invented to deal with this.
Yes, of course.
If any crime happened by anyone, to be dealt with the legal procedure so that the society can live in safe and peace and live together.
Yes. As we are coming to my last questions, the balancing between enforcement of its migration laws in Egypt and the obligation towards refugees and asylum seekers. How does it go with you there?
As I'm telling you, it's a bit it seems you take an occasion of my background. So it's a very, I think, practical but also academic question. As soon as an international treaty has been adopted in a country, it covers by our article of the constitution, it goes directly to our domestic legislation. So as I told you in my previous question, that 1951 convention of the states of refugees goes directly to our national legislation to be applied, and the legislature, while preparing or adapting the new laws, they put all these international treaties in front of them, you know, as a textbook. So if you are like correcting the papers, if you are a teacher and correcting the papers, or you are doing an assessment, you put this as the guidebook how you will correct your exam papers. This is what's happening directly.
So now, as we are coming to the last question, the issue of you have UNHCR, you have the government of South Sudan engaging there with you, you have IOM. How do you explore alternatives so that regularization of or resettlement pathways are going in the right way to prevent some of the concerns in the future regarding the South Sudanese there? Because this is also like some South Sudanese who are on resettlement, waiting resettlement, some of them they suffered because of lack of some of the issues. Yeah.
Thank you for this question. There are always contacts with the international organization. We have resident coordinator, as is happening for UN, and we have also the UNHCR representative, and we have also IOM representative. And there are daily, coordination with my head office in Cairo, with the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and also the Ministry of Interior and others, to organize and to deal with all these challenges happening now. Of course, any new law or any new regulation, it is in every place. Mm-hmm. If you make a regulation coordinating economic activities, if you have new legislation regulating tourism, mining, regulating transportation. Of course, it has some challenges. Yeah. This is known in the legal and social fields.
Which will require adjustments and all these.
These adjustments. So Egypt was keen from the beginning to put all these stakeholders with coordination with us. We have, direct contacts. And this, last week, our President of the Republic received the UNHCR head and President Borhum Saleh, and they talked a lot about these things, and also Egypt also put His Excellency Dr. Saleh about the challenges we face, and they also the sharing responsibility for the international community to us, because as I told you, all of these brothers and sisters are received as guests. We are not getting camps for refugees. We are not putting camps for asylum seekers. That might happen before in many places in the world. And of course, mm-hmm. they live directly in the government. So there are enormous pressure, I call it also, it had enormous pressure on our economy and our health sector, educational mm-hmm. sector, services. But I also see it as a promise for me, because I am, as I told you before our interview, mm-hmm. I go to shops, I go to working places, to clubs, to roads. I saw many of these brothers and sisters working mm-hmm. and how they are added value to our
Maybe Ambassador, this is an opportunity to explain the advantage, and of not opening refugee camps or asylum seekers camp, mm-hmm. and allowing these asylum seekers and refugees to stay together with your citizens in the residential areas, moving around, and all this. What are the advantages of this?
As I told you, there are many advantages: economic, societal. Variety, cultural variety. This is enrich our culture, as you've seen. Maybe in South Sudan, English is your formal language.
Yeah.
Egypt is Arabic. Maybe via some interaction, this as language in some schools or some educational systems, this interaction might have a benefit. But people don't see this sometimes. For this, thank you also for your coming and very important questions, that this people might not think about the positives. If I want to think negative, I go for the negative. If I want to think positive, I could see some positive examples.
Yeah, thank you. Now it's time for you. If you have any pending issue, topic, message you want to deliver to our listeners, this is your time to say that.
Thank you, Mr. Gabriel, for everything. So maybe just I had, I think, a duty as an Egyptian ambassador here to highlight that we had here also success stories upcoming or ongoing here in South Sudan, away from all the fields we have talked about regarding our bilateral relation. We have here, you know, the Egyptian Medical Center in Juba.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Which is happening day by day, or doing day by day, dealings to provide services of medical or pharmaceutical to the South Sudanese. I visited, you know, the center in Juba many times. I'm seeing how the center and its staff interact very positively and very friendly and very brotherly with the patients, and the quality of medical services provided. And it's have an enormous positive effect as an important community service provided from Egypt to all the people of South Sudan who are living in Juba. Frankly, I want this experience to be replicated, as I told you before, in many places as other projects of energy or others. It's worth to note also that there are a large number of South Sudanese patients going to Egypt for medical service and medical surgeries and others. And we are keen to develop and sustain in the future, looking for the cure and health of the whole South Sudanese people. Also, I would like also to highlight other success story, as I'm telling you. We have an Egyptian technical school in Wau, in western Bahr al-Ghazal, which provide technical education in the fields of hospitality, renewables, electricity, plumbing, and without scholastic fees. No fees are paid. The certificate also of these schools are certified by Egypt, so anybody is graduated can work easily in Egypt. The curriculum and head teachers provided by Egypt, and we hope that similar success stories to be replicated in South Sudan. I couldn't forget our irrigation mission. We have here a big irrigation mission, and working closely with the South Sudanese counterparts in the Ministry of Water Resources and Irrigation to observe the flooding and the other issues of the Nile, and also doing many projects regarding flooding and how we face it. I hope these projects could be intensified in the coming period in line of the framework which we have talked about before, our bilateral relations. I thank you very much, Mr. Gabriel, for coming. Thank Radio Miraya. Thank the United Nations Mission in South Sudan for all this cooperation. And I'm hoping that this interview will not be, it is the first, but not the least.
Will not be the last. Thank you, Ambassador Hazim Mamdouh Fawzi, Ambassador of the Arab Republic of Egypt to the Republic of South Sudan. We had a lot of questions to you. Thanks for your patience and for your elaborate response, and we hope to see you again. Thank you very much. Shukran jazilan.
Shukran. Shukran.
Shukran.